Inside Florida Politics, powered by Gannett, the nation's biggest newspaper company. The Republican red wave that so many people thought was going to crash over America during the elections, well, it didn't happen, but it sure washed over Florida. We'll be talking about that tide and what else it carried in and how Florida man, the former President Donald Trump, well, he thinks the water is just fine for another run for president. Hello, I'm Gannett, Florida Capitol Bureau reporter John Kennedy, and I'm joined this week by Antonio Finns, political editor of the Palm Beach Post, and Stephanie Natat, a reporter with the Palm Beach Post. But first, anybody who's listened to the show knows what that music means, and it means if you're hearing what I'm hearing, it's time for us to pick a number that figures in Florida politics this week. Antonio, what have you got?
Well, you know what, John? I've been lately out in the stratosphere like the Artemis moon rocket, but I'm staying close to home this year, close to planet Earth, unlike Major Tom. I'm going with a 10.
A 10. That sounds pretty simple, and it's pretty terrestrial. Stephanie, you're making your Inside Florida Politics debut, but of course, there's no pressure. But you do have a good number, don't you?
I do have a good number for you.
What is it?
The number 9.
All right. We'll get back to that. My number is a simple 24. I've got a 24, but we're going to keep you in suspense for a while and come back later in the show and tell you what these numbers mean. But let's get to what's been going on in Florida. And it's been a lot. Well, you know, Governor Ron DeSantis picked up a 19% win over Democrat Charlie Crist in the governor's race this month. And that sent reporters scrambling to their thesauruses to find other words for what? Clobbered, crushed, humiliated, stomped. I know I asked my editor if tail whooping has got a G or not. The winning for Florida Republicans didn't stop there, with the party gaining super majorities in both houses of the legislature, the state Senate and the state House, and the congressional delegation as well. You've seen a sweep of all cabinet offices, and the Republicans have retained both Florida seats in the United States Senate. That kind of across the board, all one party government has not been seen in this state in decades, and back from when Democrats were in charge. And for Republicans, this is the first time ever. But, you know, I got to ask you, Antonio, is this going to be the election that stops anyone from talking about how Florida is the nation's biggest swing state? You know, we've been saying that for more than 20 years, but it kind of looks like the swinging seems to have stopped.
Yeah, the swinging has stopped, and that pendulum is stuck way off to the right of the state's political spectrum. It is still stunning more than a week later, the margins of victory, and even more so from where so many of those votes came from, namely the formerly blue bastions of Palm Beach and Miami-Dade counties. In fact, you know, I did a comparison to the midterm election 2002, 20 years ago, which was the last time we had a governor reelected by a margin anywhere near this big. And by the time, you know, the polls were closed back in 2002, we were ready to declare a winner, just like in 2022. In that race, Governor Jeb Bush carried his home county, Miami-Dade, but losing Democratic candidate Bill McBride, still managed to win 11 counties across the state on the way to a 13-point drubbing. Charlie Crist just carried a handful of counties in last Tuesday's beatdown. And Stephanie can talk more in depth about what happened in Palm Beach and Miami-Dade, because she's written about that. But I will say we have seen, you know, two major trends here building the past few decades that will keep that pendulum firmly on the right, on the red side of the political ledger. One is there's just been a major demographic shift in Florida, in which Rust Belt refugees and people from the Americas have made the state much more conservative. Just as decades ago, retirees from heavily unionized and liberal Northeast moved to Florida and altered the state's political DNA to be much more democratic, liberal, at least more of a swing state. A lot of people, and second, a lot of people in the state run or work for small businesses, and the Democrats' policies just have not appealed to them. These are people who are more autonomous, and they embrace that old rugged individualism way more than the paternalistic state. Now, the thing to bear in mind is that Florida has kind of become the red equivalent of California on the blue progressive left. We are kind of the polar political opposites of the Californians, But we're also, just like California, we're also anomalies compared to the rest of the country. This midterm election again showed that the country, on balance, is a centrist country. So yes, Florida is deep red, but the rest of America is not. And that's something that Florida man Donald Trump, who just launched his campaign, and the other Florida man, Ron DeSantis, who may also launch a 2024 bid, may want to take note of.
Yeah, that's a good point. There's a lot of demographic change going on here in the state, and that is interesting. The contrast between California. It's California was once a Republican bastion until like the late 80s, early 90s, and it just tipped Democratic to where now it seems like it is decidedly one of the bluest states in the nation. Though somewhat ironically, it became the last congressional elections being counted seem to be in California, and that's where basically the Republican majority is going to be found in the U.S. House. But Stephanie, you've done some deep diving reporting into what's been going on with what younger voters and how Palm Beach County pulled away from its own tradition of being a reliably Democratic county, siding with DeSantis over Crist. What are you finding out about voters there?
Yeah, so in Palm Beach County, we did see that, yes, it reddened following the midterm elections, and it did not necessarily have as much of a flip like Miami-Dade County. But going back into some context of Palm Beach County, in 2018, DeSantis lost to Gillum in the county by 17 percentage points, but this year he won against Crist by 3. So going into young voters, when I have gone to university campuses and been speaking with younger voters, you know, the issues that motivate these voters are issues like gun violence, abortion, student debt relief. But as much as these issues are really pressed on by Democrats, these issues are not necessarily like motivating with young voters when it comes to the Biden administration. So the top of the Democratic ticket, Charlie Crist, Val Demings, and the Biden administration, they're not as attractive to younger voters. And going at these campaign events, these campaign events would draw around 15 to 20 people per university. And when looking at precinct data in Palm Beach County, there were very few voters registered ages 18 to 25 in Palm Beach County comparatively to the rest of the state. And along with that, these voters, especially in specific precincts and areas where they make up the majority of the population in those areas, they tended to be registered Democrat, NPA, a few Republican, but the issue is that there were not many registered in the first place, and the motivation really was not there, especially in the Democratic ticket.
Did they give any indication as to what issues would motivate them? Climate change is often discussed, you know, the idea of a new Green Deal, more progressive. Did that seem to be the thing that they wanted to hear more from, like Biden and other Democrats?
Climate change is definitely something that a lot of young voters talk about, but the things that motivate them the most are issues like abortion, gun violence, and student debt relief. You know, something that I saw along both sides of the table, both parties generally, when it came to younger voters, really did like the idea of student debt relief. When it came to issues like abortion and gun violence, that's when things differed. But these are things where young voters specifically were extremely motivated and wanted to see action in regards to gun violence, in regards to abortion. They wanted to see it be addressed by their politicians.
That's interesting. Yeah. Well, the Democrats talked a lot about abortion. They talked a little bit less about gun violence and crime. Republicans played that the issue of crime up very heavily. But yeah, there seems to be a momentum, a motivation gap here between Republicans and Democrats this year. Our own Zach Anderson, the political editor of the Sarasota Herald Tribune, who typically is our host here today, he's away on assignment. But he and I have been reporting on some of these trends that we've seen, how Florida became such a red state for the moment, at least anyway, kind of statewide. We've been doing some reporting on that. And we've kind of anchored it around the three things. It's basically demographics. We've seen dysfunctional Democrats. And then we've seen Ron DeSantis. Those three factors seem to be driving this trend right now, where in demographics, we have such things as one oddity is that, you know, you hear DeSantis talk a lot about how people have fled you know, northern states, blue states, and states where there were COVID-19 lockdowns for his state, you know, for the free state of Florida. Well, you know, I think many of us looked at that a little bit skeptically as to how much of an impact it is. But according to data that we found from L2 data, it's a company that tracks a lot of voter trends and consumer issues, even automotive sales for some reason. Anyway, in their report, they found that almost 400,000 people moved to Florida since the early stages of the pandemic back in about March 2020. And those 400,000 that moved here tended to register as voters 2-to-1 Republican. So there's a huge pool of voters right there that have arrived in this state that, you know, undoubtedly came here a little bit of self-sorting. You know, they didn't like what they were seeing in their home states. And, you know, the siren call of Ron DeSantis, I guess, helped bring it here. And then, of course, when it comes to dysfunctional Democrats, Stephanie, you were hinting at it maybe a little bit there with how the message wasn't there. There also wasn't much of an effort by Democrats to drive turnout in this state, at least not a very successful one. Democratic turnout was much less than Republicans, and that also spelled doom for Democrats this time around. But, you know, after that and all these references to thumped, drubbed, overwhelmed and more, you know, you got to wonder, is there any hope for the Florida Democratic Party going forward? You know, Antonio, do you see a path for the party or its candidates turning the state around?
You know, it's going to be very difficult. Number one, there's not a lot of bench strength in the Democratic Party. Number two, there's nobody now that has anywhere near a statewide machine. Not that that really helped Nikki Fried much when her primary against Charlie Crist. And then on top of that, you know, there's not really, the messaging isn't great. Some of the stars on the Democratic side in the legislature tend to be more progressives. And that is not just simply not a messaging that is playing well in the rest of Florida. So, you know, we always say after these elections, particularly these midterm elections, as we did in 14 and 18, like, OK, you know, Democrats got to go back to the drawing board. There's not even much of a drawing board right now. I mean, if you're Manny Diaz, I don't even know where do you start? You don't have a statewide network. You're relegated to three counties, two of which you just lost. And you still have Orlando and Hillsborough. But in Alachua, but there's just not much to work with.
It's tough when first you've got to build the drawing board. That's a sign of a real exile that the Democrats are in right now. Stephanie, if a Floridian is young and a Democrat or Democratic leaning, you know, believes in things like the Green New Deal and politics of inclusion, should you just start packing your bags and heading north on I-95? Or are we going to see more self-sorting of voters in and out of Florida?
Well, that's a really interesting question because it's so unprecedented. So we did see a lot of voters from New York and California head into Florida, and those were mainly conservative voters. But if a Floridian is young and a progressive Democrat, that's the difficult circumstance. We are not sure if they're going to start having an influx out of Florida, and Florida's going to wind up heading a lot more deep red. But it's also the fact that there are some things that do drive younger voters from the ages of around 18 to 25. You know, we do have Florida Bright Futures comparatively to other states. That is something that brings a lot of people into Florida, especially for these universities. So it depends on what the voter specifically focuses mainly as their priorities. But what I've been seeing has been a priority has generally been issues like student debt relief, gun violence, and especially affordable college living in a way. Mm-hmm. You know, these young voters care about being able to afford their education. So in Florida, that's perfectly capable of happening, especially if you are a Florida resident. So if we're going to see them pack their bags, head north on 95, see them self-sort, that's a little unprecedented. We're going to start maybe seeing more of those trends closer to 2024 and even as a few years go on. But right now, we haven't seen that as much. But what we have seen is that young voters tend to be a lot less motivated to vote in general. They just don't really feel like their voices have been heard. And that's what I've been seeing when speaking to a lot of these young voters through university campuses and through generally more populated youth areas.
Yeah, it's interesting. The way Democrats have nominated gubernatorial candidates over the last few decades is they always try to find a centrist Democrat that can appeal to, you know, Republicans or you know, moderate Republicans and independents. And maybe that formula, is failing. It has failed in just about every attempt that the Democrats have done. The only year that they made a real race in running for governor was when a more progressive Democrat, Andrew Gillum, was on the ballot against little-known Republican Ron DeSantis in 2018. So maybe that progressive approach is where the state Democrats need to go. Yet then again, we are seeing a state where the vast majority of you know, conservative to moderate middle of the roaders seem to be the dominant population. So are they going to be turned off by a progressive? It's a real conundrum that Democrats are facing right now. Well, they got another issue to deal with Florida man Donald Trump is back, starting another presidential run. And you both, Stephanie and Antonio, you both happened to be at Mar-a-Lago for the big moment when he launched his third run for the White House. Of course, he'd been teasing this out for a while, but Stephanie, give us an idea of what was it like in the room? You know, who was the fan base here for this event? And, you know, I'm assuming these are the Trump true believers, no doubt.
Well, I would say this room was definitely energetic. It was elegant, but spirited. So, you know, a lot of Trump's primary rally leaders, local Republican advocates and officials, they were all at this event. So the fan base, I'd say, ranged from people who liked Trump's energy and believed he was a president who fought for every citizen. But then it also ranged to people who considered him remarkable and people who would stay loyal and dedicated to helping him run his campaign. And that's a lot of what most of the conversation was. They were loyal. They were dedicated. They wanted to continue to support and help former President Trump. So these people preach election integrity and foreign policy as some of the main driving factors for loving the former president. But they also listed things like his energy, his strong spirit to fight back, as things they enjoyed about him as a president. So, you know, I'd say something remarkable especially was when he did announce that he was going to run again for president. The cheer for when he announced was around close to a minute long. People didn't just cheer, though. They erupted in joy. So the crowd was very interactive. It felt, instead of you are in a large ballroom with a former president, it was a lot more personal. People look at former President Trump like he is their friend and like he is close to them. They know him personally. And they were in his home. So the room was very spirited. It was very energetic. And it was, of all, very excited for his announcement.
And at the same time, this was not quite a MAGA crowd, was it? I mean, this was more of the moneyed Palm Beach kind of crowd, as opposed to the real mass that's out there that supports him.
I would say it was a mixture of both, because a lot of the rally leaders where I've seen specifically, they are always at Mr. Trump's rallies. I saw them in the room. They were invited. And these leaders who are not necessarily, you know, people who are giving lots and lots of sponsorships for his campaign, but they are consistently bringing the energy into Palm Beach County and to South Florida areas. They were at this event, these local Republican advocates especially. But then there were the people who were there to support his campaign, to help sponsor his campaign, and to support really funding the presidential race as well.
Well, Antonio, you know, there also was an elephant in the room. This being Palm Beach, I should point out that was figuratively, of course, I'm saying. And the elephant in the room is Ron DeSantis, who seems to be on the same White House path as his one-time mentor and tweet endorser. This is an episode of The Apprentice that Trump never envisioned. How is this going to play out?
Well, John, it's playing out like Shakespeare in the Sun right now. And, I have to say, the other day I was scrolling through Netflix and I came across the icon for, remember the House of Cards, that the hit from about a decade ago? Well,
absolutely.
House of Cards is boring again compared to what we're seeing unfold here, this drama. And so far, I have to tell you, it's unfolding badly for Trump. His mocking of DeSantis as Governor Ron DeSanctimonious backfired, as did then his veiled threats to unearth some hidden detail of the governor's past. And then as did that six-part diatribe that Trump dropped a week ago on his Truth Social platform. It's all backfiring. And why? Well, one reason is because he doesn't have conservative media behind him, cleaning up after him, sanitizing his mistakes, sweeping missteps under the rug in nothing to see here fashion. You know, Fox News, the New York Post, the Wall Street Journal editorial board, and others have simply decided we want someone else. And that has been that's been a torpedo right at the president, the former president, and his campaign. Look, another reason that this is not working out well for Trump right now is that, unlike others that he vanquished in 2016, for example, like Jeb Bush, Marco Rubio, Ted Cruz, DeSantis does not have to strike back at Trump when he gets broadsided by some salvo, some nickname or something. He does not have to strike back. He doesn't have to go rolling the muck with Trump, which ultimately doomed the others. It's DeSantis who really is in the catbird seat, because come January, he gets sworn in, and you know all the conservative media networks are going to carry that speech live. And then he has a legislative session to prep for, and he'll be getting a lot of attention for, you imagine, all sorts of new anti-woke agenda items are going to come down out of Tallahassee. And then he actually has the legislative session that where he can dominate with this legislation and get all this culture war new laws done. And then by then it's May, and then he has until June to sign all this legislation live on Fox News. In the meantime, what's Trump going to do? Okay, he can attack and attack and attack, and DeSantis can just do and do and do. You know, Trump has to find ways, now that he's launched his campaign, that he doesn't have this endless teasing going on. Now he's launched, and now he has to find ways to keep his campaign fresh and in the headlines. You know, what's he going to do? He's going to have a rally every weekend? You know, already I can tell you, having listened, watched so many of these rallies, and Stephanie and I were actually the one in Miami the Sunday before Election Day, you know, that stump speech is just, it's repetitive. He kind of says the same thing over and over. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it's popular with the base, which loves Trump's version of this, you know, this political Rocky Horror Picture Show, but the general population is tuning out. And again, part of that is because big conservative media has also moved on. Look, the New York Post buried coverage of Trump's campaign speech on Tuesday night. They buried it to page 26. And I didn't even know they had 26 pages. Having said all this, we've all been conditioned not to discount Trump and not to do so, because he has a loyal base and is popular among the rank and file GOP. And regardless of what we say, the base, as long as they're behind him, the base will keep him relevant. They'll keep him in this campaign. But so far, though, you know, reviews of his very special announcement in Mar-a-Lago on Tuesday night have not been great. Many in conservative circles described it as low energy, which was a particularly sharp zinger, given, remember, that's how he described Jeb Bush.
That's how he got Jeb.
So, and then just in the last day or so, mega donor Ken Griffin again gave yet another interview where basically he said he's not going to back Trump with big time money, and he's moving away from Trump. So, yeah, the elephant, and Ken Griffin has been very close to DeSantis, and he's backing DeSantis. So, yeah, the elephant, as you said, the elephant in the room is DeSantis, but he's not much of a secret elephant or a backdrop elephant. He's pretty much up front and center.
Do you think in this state, DeSantis has enough support that his presence will tamp down any divide within the Republican Party? Because there is the potential there. Some people about the fate of the Democrats have said to me, one of the best things that could happen for the Democrats is basically nuclear war between DeSantis supporters and Trump supporters. We've seen a little bit of that with Matt Gaetz, the congressman from the Panhandle, endorsing Trump. The state's Republican Party chairman, Joe Gruters, who goes way back with Trump, he was at the event at Mar-a-Lago. He has been on the outs with DeSantis for several years now. But, you know, is there a possibility that Republicans really go into a civil war in this state over who to support?
That is out there. That definitely is a possibility. But we're also seeing that even among some of Mr. Trump's most ardent backers, including people that were at Mar-a-Lago on Tuesday evening, even they're saying, hey, the name calling doesn't work. That's not the way to go. And precisely for that reason, because if this becomes, you know, scorched earth, you know, march to Savannah here with Sherman, then this is could be very damaging to both of them in this state. But again, even what we're seeing from the and Stephanie can talk to this as talk about this as well, because she's talked to a lot of these folks. Many of them are saying that no, you know, a fight between the two of them is just in nobody's interest. But then again, you know, going back to our previous conversation, if you're the Florida Democratic Party and if your road back to relevance is, you know, a fight between, you know, a UFC cage match between Trump and DeSantis, again, that ain't much of a strategy.
That's true. Yeah, they're hoping to bring it on. Hey, well, listen, I think I'm hearing music that reminds us all that it's time to get back to those numbers that we threw out there earlier. Stephanie, you had that 9. What can you tell us about what does 9 mean in Florida?
Yeah, so I chose 9 because specifically I was talking about young voters in Palm Beach County. And in Palm Beach County, from ages 18 to 25, we only have about 9% registered in the county. So that was a critical number for me to show that there was not a lot of young voters who were registered in the first place in Palm Beach County, let alone turnout. That was already a difficult way for the Democrats to grasp onto young voters. It was already difficult to turn them out in the first place since there was not a lot to work with.
Yeah, they just weren't there. And if you amp that up around other counties across the state, probably similar low registration numbers, which is not good. Antonio, you were a 10, not too far from Stephanie's 9.
10 is the number of votes that U.S. Senator Rick Scott, another Florida man in the political news, reportedly got in his failed quest to topple Mitch Broken Old Crow McConnell as Senate Minority Leader. Look, Scott, with Trump having his back, this week tried to knock McConnell from his perch as the GOP chief in the chamber. But reports said Scott got trounced like an NFL team playing for a top pick in next year's draft by a score of 37 to 10. Look, it is an ignominious exclamation point on Scott's failed effort as chair of the GOP Take Back the Senate Committee. You know, let's kind of review here. If you recall that Scott got this plum assignment, and then last spring, when it looked like Republicans were really on their way to just routing Democrats and taking back the Senate with a nice majority, Rick Scott decided that he was going to, with McConnell right behind him, he was going to just throw out there this plan, that legislation to sunset all federal programs, including Social Security and Medicare, unless they were reauthorized every 5 years. That didn't play well with McConnell and the Senate Democrats. Then he got into it again with McConnell after during the primary season, when McConnell warned about the quality, quote unquote, quality of candidates that GOP was selecting, the Republican voters who were selecting that in the Mr. Trump was backing as the nominees of the party in some of these key state Senate battles in some of these, you know, battleground states. McConnell warned about the quality. Scott said, no, you're wrong. These are great candidates. Well, look what happened last Tuesday. Not only did the Republicans not take over the Senate, they actually lose a seat. And largely because candidates like Mehmet Oz and Don Bolduc and Adam Laxalt and Blake Masters just failed in these bids. And in states that, quite frankly, given, you know, the election year scenario, they should have won. But here's the thing, that 10 figure of the votes of Rick Scott is also significant for another reason. That appears to be the extent of the hard right caucus in the U.S. Senate, 10% of the whole Senate, suggesting again that while far right politics play well in Florida, Scott's home, they are not getting traction across the country. And that's something that, again, Republicans looking at 2024 are going to have to take into account. Yeah, in the House is different. The Freedom Caucus is a big deal. But in the Senate, which is much more reflective of the country as a whole, hard right politics just are not getting traction.
You got to wonder how long is Rick Scott going to be in McConnell's doghouse? It may be at least for another couple of years at this point. Well, my number 24, well, that's the number of Republican women that have been elected to the Florida House of Representatives this month. The 24, that's a record for the Republican Party. And for Democrats, it's probably also a little disconcerting, since candidates in Florida, from Senate contender Val Demings to gubernatorial candidate Charlie Crist, they put so much stock in women winning the women's vote, which many thought was going to be powered by support for abortion rights, which are still, you know, very threatened going forward into this next year's legislative session. But, you know, keeping in the theme of so much of what we've talked about today with Democratic stumbles in Florida, women let the Democrats down, or vice versa. According to exit polls, DeSantis won 52% of Florida women, while Crist captured only 47% of these voters. Abortion as an issue on the minds of all voters in this exit poll, it was a distant second to inflation when it came to what was driving their vote. That comes even after polls have shown that 54% of Florida voters said they were angry by the United States Supreme Court's decision, which overturned Roe versus Wade and gave power to the states to enact stricter abortion laws or ban the procedure outright. But somehow, you know, out of these mixed signals, Republicans will have two dozen Republican women in their 85-member caucus. That's a significant number that will likely play some role in shaping policy coming out of this supermajority caucus. This legislature, though, has been completely in the pocket of Governor Ron DeSantis for the past 4 years. And, you know, I'm thinking it's likely to be again. You know, whatever the governor wants, the governor's going to get out of this legislature. Well, that's all the time we have for today. I'd like to thank the behind-the-scenes guru of Inside Florida Politics. That's our recording engineer, Thomas Forte of the Palm Beach Post. And thanks to all of you, our listeners, for joining us today. And have a happy Thanksgiving. And stay cool, Florida.